Well, the Panama Canal turns 100 years old this year, and it's getting a makeover. Construction is underway on two new locks and the expansion of existing locks scheduled to open in 2015. Here to talk about the project and a new exhibit opening up in about a week at the Linda Hall Library are Alberto Alemán Zubieta. He's a former CEO of the Panama Canal Authority. He's served in that post from 1996 to 2012. He joins us this morning from his office in Panama City. And Mr. Alemán, nice to have you. Good morning.
It's a real pleasure to be talking to you and your people listening in Kansas City.
Thank you. And Lisa Brower is also here. She's president of the Linda Hall Library. And Lisa, good to have you, too. Welcome.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Alemán, tell us a little bit about what the opening of the Panama Canal meant to the world 100 years ago back in 1914, because this was very obviously a huge deal around the globe.
Well, really, it's it has a huge impact back in those days, because what the Panama Canal did back 100 years ago was actually making a pass between the two largest oceans in the world. This is a dream that mankind has had for now over 500 years. When Christopher Columbus was looking at exploring and founding the Americas, he was looking for that passage to go actually to India, and he could not find it. And he got very close to actually looking at the Pacific Ocean, which was discovered 500 years ago by Balboa here in Panama, when he discovered the Pacific Ocean. Since then, the Spanish started studying for the first time the possibilities of connecting the two oceans through Panama, because the distance in Panama, in the Isthmus of Panama, is only 80 kilometers or 50 miles between the two oceans. And so many efforts were made. The first one was by the French, by Ferdinand de Lesseps, who was the visionary also, because I think he was a visionary person. He built the first Suez Canal, and that was connecting the Mediterranean Sea with the Red Sea, and allowing then that short passage between Europe and Asia.
And Mr. Alemán, I've heard you say in the past that you point out that the Panama Canal runs north and south, not east and west, as most people think it does.
Yeah, because Panama is an S. It's the Isthmus of Panama is like an S, and therefore the canal is located actually moving north to south rather than east to west. In fact, the reason why the Pacific is called the South Sea was because when Balboa discovered the ocean, he discovered the ocean here in Panama, and he was actually looking south. If he had discovered this ocean somewhere else, he would have been maybe the ocean of the east. That's why the Pacific is actually called the South Sea.
Yeah. Well, Lisa Brower, why an exhibit about the Panama Canal here in the middle of America? What brought your interest, stirred your interest in all this?
Well, Steve, because the Linda Hall Library is first and foremost a library dedicated to maintaining the history of engineering and technology, an exhibition having to do with one of the world's greatest feats of engineering is right in our wheelhouse. But more importantly than that, we have a collection that documents from a first person's perspective the Americans' participation in building the canal from the moment the Americans entered the project until the canal was completed.
And this was, again, a Herculean task. As you look over the scope of what this whole job involved, what stands out to you? People died, malaria, all sorts of things.
I think the thing that stands out is the fact that it was finally completed because, as you said, people died. There were unknown casualties. I mean, we know that about 6,000 people died, but I suspect perhaps more than that died due to mudslides, landslides, malaria, yellow fever, and various other calamities. But the fact that it actually could be done, it was really breaking through mountains. There had been so many failed attempts. And the fact that a concerted effort finally made it happen.
So what are you going to display at the Linda Hall Library that might be of interest to people? What do you have?
Well, we have a collection known as the A.B. Nichols Collection, and A.B. Nichols was an American engineer who arrived in the Canal Zone right after the Americans entered the project, and he stayed until the project was completed. And his archive consists of thousands of photographs, maps, blueprints, drawings, postcards, news clippings, memos, everything somebody who would want to document the entire event might assemble. And the library's had this collection since 1995. And it really is a gold mine of not only research information, but it does explain in entirety the not only the engineering feat that was the building of the canal, but the social history of the canal. It talks about the stratified society that was formed down there, the medical challenges, the challenges of moving people and equipment and gold around the canal zone. So it really is a very complete picture.
Wow. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the 100th anniversary of the Panama Canal opening up 100 years ago. We're joined by Lisa Brower, president of the Linda Hall Library, and Alberto Alemán Zubieta, who's a former CEO of the Panama Canal Authority. You know, Mr. Alemán, you know, I get a sense, and this is just me speculating perhaps a little bit here, that the world has come to more or less take the Panama Canal for granted. And this history, this sacrifice that was made 100 years ago, has been a little bit overlooked over the years. Am I right about that?
Well, I think that maybe yes. The issue is that that is one of the greatest engineering feats. And what is amazing is how simple actually it is. It's at the time when the canal was built, it has many firsts. Mankind in the U.S., created the largest man-made lake in the world at the time. It was the largest structure ever built at the time. That was the Gatun Locks. And also the largest earth dam. That was the dam that dammed the Chagres River to create this very huge lake. Because the canal actually works on fresh water. And what also is important is about the feat of solving the problem of the mosquito carrying the malaria. In those days, people did not believe that that was the mosquito was the one carrying the malaria. And those things happened in Panama. General Gorgas, who was the military doctor, was the one in charge of actually cleaning up the city and the area of work. And actually, he saved many, many lives and make possible the building of the canal, because that was one of the reasons why the French failed so miserably when they were trying to build the canal back in the 1880s. So when we look today at what we are trying to do to expand the canal, building new set of locks and deepening the navigational channels, and it's going to take us actually from 2007 to 2015, it's almost 8 to 9 years to build this facility now. We have to think that this was done, the original canal was done in 10 years, from 1904 to 1914. In those days, in those conditions, they were, you know, the people who work at the canal and the engineers and the effort that was put in making this happen, it's unique in the world. I think that it's a very unique facility, and it doesn't seem to amaze the people and anyone who comes to Panama to see it, how that works and how it was done back 100 years now.
Yeah. Mr. Alemán, as you look at all the various feats that went into constructing this canal, into making this Panama Canal come into reality, What one feat stands out to you the most? What was the singular achievement of completing this canal, the toughest obstacle to get past, perhaps?
Well, first, I think that it was solving the cleaning up the place and making it, you know, possible to build and people were not being dying by malaria and yellow fever. That is critical. But the other thing, it's the way that they solve the issue of the Chagres River by damming the river and creating this very large lake. which also only required them to build an excavation that is only 12 kilometers long, from what we call the Geller Cut. And the other feat that was very important was what the engineer in charge of that at the time, that was Stevens, he created a system by using railroads that was basically conveyor belts. He has a system of railroads that that took the excavation out of the Geller Cut into the Pacific side of Panama. And it's amazing when you see the photos of how that was done and how that excavation was made, using the machinery in a way that has never been done before.
Lisa Brower, as you look at this canal, what to you was the great single achievement of getting this thing done? What surprises you that humankind was able to pull off 100 years ago?
Well, you know, as Alberto said, I think one of the most significant things was the triumph over disease.
Yeah.
You know.
And the danger there was what? What was happening that was slowing things down?
Well, people were dying in greater numbers than they were arriving in the canal zone. And we actually have some photographs in the collection that show that because of the heat, some of the hospital beds were placed in pools of water. You know, the legs of the beds were placed in little tin cans of water. And, of course, water breeds mosquitoes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Without realizing it at the time, people who were suffering from yellow fever and malaria, which were borne by insects, were actually becoming reinfected.
And they put the legs of the bed inside those cans. Why?
To cool, as a cooling agent. There was no air conditioning there, and it was very hot. So it was good intentions gone awry, but, you know, insects and mosquitoes would breed in those little pools of water and then reinfect the patients.
Mm-hmm.
So I think from my perspective, because I am not as prepared to comment on the specifics of engineering as Alberto is, but I think from a human perspective, the fact that people survived, you know, the great medical obstacles to complete the canal.
Yeah. Mr. Aleman, you've talked in here about the effort now underway to expand the Panama Canal. You need to expand it. Why?
Well, because I think that the canal now puts restriction to the size of ships. This was built 100 years ago. Now you have these very large, what they call post-Panama ships. That means they are beyond the Panama Canal in size. And by allowing that, you're bringing to the industry a huge opportunity in scale, because you're scaling up the size of the ships. You will be able to move ships that are three times the size of what can be moved today. And that will bring huge advantage to the world commerce. It's actually like, you know, rebuilding the canal again. Allowing, for instance, today you can only pass through the Panama Canal, a ship with 4,500 containers.
Mm-hmm.
When you put containers, now you're going to be able to move over 14,000 containers on a vessel.
Hey, what's this project going to cost, Mr. Aleman? What's the price tag, and who on earth is paying for it?
Well, it's Panama is paying for it. The Panama Canal Authority is paying for it. It's a $5.3 billion project. And it's now... Overall, about 73% of the project is completed. It's a very complex program because it's not only about building the locks. It's locks. It's also dredging the navigational channels, also the entrances both in the Pacific and Atlantic, because we need to allow bigger draft because the ships are much larger, not only in beam and width and length, but also in draft. The canal today allows 39.5 feet in draft. The new set of locks will allow, depending on the lake, up to 55 feet of draft. So it's a huge undertaking. It's one of the largest dredging projects in the world. We're moving 55 million cubic meters of material that have been to be dredged. And when you add to that the dry excavation, you get over 120 million cubic meters of material that is being excavated to do this expansion.
Today, Mr. Aleman, what does it cost to pass a ship through the canal? What's the cost of one passage through that canal?
Well, if let's say it's a container ship, it's about $400,000 to move the ship, which comes to about $80 per container.
Wow. And how long does it take? How long does the process take to actually go from one ocean to the other?
Usually the average time to do the transit is between 10 and 12 hours. But the overall time from the time the ships arrive to the shores of the canal, and you have to do the inspection and checking and everything, it usually takes, if you have a reservation for the space, it takes less than 18 hours to move from one ocean to the other.
Wow.
From the time you arrive to the time you leave.
That's amazing. Lisa Brower from Linda Hall Library. Have you been there? Have you
visited? No, I haven't.
I would love to go and see it.
Let's go.
Yeah, it just sounds terrific.
I'm well, in.
Mr. Alamon, what surprises people, tourists who come down to view this canal? What's the most surprising thing that tends to hit people?
Well, I think that not only the nature and how it works, because it's you elevate the ship 85 feet, and then you navigate through a very beautiful lake, and then you go down again. So it's actually like navigating in the middle of the Americas. So I think that people are amazed by also how tight the ship is when it's within the locks. It's only less than 2 feet on each side of the ship.
Just 2 feet.
So
that's amazing.
That,
yeah.
Yeah, 2 feet. Yeah, on each side. It's very close to the wall. Between the ship and the wall, it's very, very, very tight. And that's done with locomotives and the equipment that we have in the canal to move the ships in that way.
Will there be more room once the canal is expanded? Will there be more space between the side of the wall and the ship itself?
Yes, it will be 20 feet because the ship will be moved differently. In the case of the canal today, the ships are tied to locomotives. We call them mules. And they have cables to align the ship in the center of the chamber with only 2 feet at each side. That's how it's done.
You know, I read that
in the new canal,
yeah,
it will be with tugboats inside of the chamber. Assisting the ship inside of the chamber. It's going to be a different operation.
Huh. I read that the new locks were slated to open this year as part of a centennial celebration, but now it's been delayed by a year or two. Mr. Alamon, why the delay? What happened there?
Well, it's on a complex project like this, you know, there's been some issues with the contractors. They were supposed to finish this project or to be able to open at the end of this year, of 2014. They have been delayed. They have some issues with the and some claims to the canal, which we have not accepted. But overall, they have taken some time to be able to basically, let's say, operate the way they should have done since the beginning of the project. And this has brought basically a one-year delay in the project.
I should point out that Alberto Alemán Zubieta will be speaking next Tuesday evening, April 8th, at the Linda Hall Library to open the year-long Panama Canal Centennial Celebration. Advanced reservations for the talk are required. Visit lindahall.org for more information and to make one of those reservations. That's next Tuesday evening, April 8th, at the Linda Hall Library. You know, folks want to pursue this a little bit more, you know, and get more information, Lisa, as to, you know, how this canal was built. I know David McCullough wrote the great book, The Path Between the Seas. Is that the place for folks to go, or where would you recommend?
Well, certainly that is a very comprehensive history of the canal, and in many ways it served as our source text for the exhibition. Mr. McCullough will be in Kansas City on October 2nd.
No kidding.
Speaking as part of the Linda Hall Library's lecture series.
Well, we've got to bring him back here. He's one of my all-time favorite guests.
We can make it happen.
Sat in your chair over the years. What a wonderful man he is.
Well, he will be back, and he will be speaking specifically about the canal. So that is one of the great resources. But, of course, our exhibition, Steve, is going to be very comprehensive, and I encourage people with any degree of interest in the canal to come and see our exhibition. It will be open from April 8th through December 31st. Companion exhibitions by the Truman Library Institute will be mounted, as well as the Kansas City Public Library. And Wednesday night, April 2nd, 630 Kansas City Public Library Plaza branch is showing a community screening of the American Experience documentary on the Panama Canal.
Okay. And again, April 8th, a week from Tuesday evening, to see Mr. Aleman here in Kansas City at the Linda Hall Library. More information on that, lindahall.org. And Mr. Aleman, what a pleasure to have you. Thanks so much for taking some time.
No, my pleasure. And we'll see you in Kansas City in a week's time.
We'll look forward to it. Lisa Brower, president of the Linda Hall Library, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Steve. Good to have
you,
too. You bet.